Hey, welcome everybody. This is the State of the CIO, where we talk with America's top IT leaders about the changing role of technology in the C-suite. I'm your host, Dan Kelly. Hey everyone, Dan Kelly here with State of the CIO podcast. I hope everyone's having a wonderful day. Today I've got a great guest with me. His name is Jim Mihalik. He's got 30 plus years in IT leadership and an Amazon bestseller. Hey Jim, how are you doing today?
Dan, it's great to talk with you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really looking forward to this conversation, specifically because we haven't talked about strategy in a long time, and I hear you might know a thing or two about developing strategies.
Well, I've written a big book, so that I guess that means I know something.
Yeah. Or you just like to write.
Or I just like to write. That's right. One or the other.
Yeah. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, Jim?
Well, thanks, Dan. I've twice been a CIO. The first one, I was the fourth CIO in 6 years, so you can imagine the turmoil that was there. Both of them, we were moving off of one platform to another, so it's pretty transformational. I've also been a consulting manager for two big four firms, a partner for a regional firm, and I've had executive positions, leadership positions with an enterprise software company. So I've been on both sides of the desk, had a pretty varied career, which I think gives me a pretty good perspective on this. Most of the work I have been doing for the last 20 years, whether for consulting firms or the enterprise software companies, has been helping our customers and our clients start with a blank sheet of paper and build an IT strategy, whether for a business unit or for an entire enterprise. So it's kind of from that foundation that this book came to be.
Yeah, and I'm curious, which side of the desk, you don't need to name companies, but which side of the table, if you will, have you enjoyed more? And maybe even building on that question, has influenced your writing more? Just curious.
I've enjoyed both, and I certainly learned a lot being a CIO, but I more enjoy being the consultant. I enjoy just the varied number of customers and clients I get to interact with, seeing the challenges. Many of the challenges are very similar. Many of the challenges are very unique. And it's the confluence of those things that really helps. It educates me. It informs me. It excites me. And so I enjoy that more than just being at one place and sticking to that for both places. You know, once you're implementing the IT strategy, you're going to be there a while working through the nuts and bolts of all that. I enjoyed that during the two times I did it, but I much more enjoy just the varied enterprise backgrounds I get to see with the various customers. So I like the consulting piece. At least for me, it works better.
Right. Now, I've got an off-the-wall question before we get into talking about strategy. Okay?
I'm ready.
How did you become a nationally published sports photographer and an accomplished performing jazz musician, which I have in my notes here? I'd like to learn about this.
So, that's funny. So, my wife, this is back many years ago. I was working just so many hours. You know, you're young, you're trying to make your mark. And she's like, you got to get a hobby. You got to have something else you do besides just work all the time. And so bought a camera. I was in my early to mid 20s. And I bought a camera. And that was kind of fun. But I thought, I need to do more with this than just shoot, you know, family pictures. I need to do more. And so I was a grad student at West Virginia. And so I was able to get on the sidelines to shoot West Virginia football. And that parlayed into shooting. West Virginia is just 50 miles south of Pittsburgh. I began shooting Steeler games and Pirates games. Shooting the University of Pittsburgh football. We moved to Tennessee. I was shooting Tennessee football. You kind of just started as, hey, you need to get a hobby into, I got pretty involved in it for a while.
That's great.
And then as far as the musician part, I had knee surgery several years ago, and I knew I was going to be laid up for a while. And I thought, you know what? I need to learn a new instrument. So I bought a bass and thought, since I'm not going to be that mobile, I'll just sit at home and learn how to play the bass. I'd never played a string instrument.
Yep.
And so that kind of led to, I'm kind of stuck here at the house anyway. And this is back before we could do all this remote work. So
Right. Literally
being at home was you weren't working. So I spent some time learning how to play the bass and actually got pretty good at it. So
that makes perfect sense. You don't need to move anywhere with that instrument. Yeah.
That's exactly
just your arms.
Just your arms.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I want to talk about your core competency, if you will. And
sure.
I'm not referring to being a musician, but rather, on the strategy side, I'd like to ask you just a generic, open-ended question that I think will resonate with a lot of our listeners who are primarily in the C-suite within an IT leadership capacity. If one of our listeners was asked to draw up a refreshed or a brand new strategy with a blank canvas for their IT environment, how would you suggest they go about it? What are the first steps they take?
So as tedious and boring as this is, I'm a big advocate of drawing up your current environment. It's pretty rare that in today's business environment, it would be very rare for somebody to get the luxury of starting with a blank sheet of paper in a green field and standing up a new full IT environment from scratch. You're likely starting with something. And if that business has been around for a while, and if there have been any mergers or acquisitions, you've got a variety of things in place today. So I need to understand, what are our accounting systems? What's our sales system? What's our production system? What's our purchasing system? All of these, I need to understand what all these components are. And then obviously I have some idea where I want to take this, because I'm not doing a strategy just for kicks. Somebody's telling me that we need a strategy because, and I think that's key to understand what's the driver. So once I kind of lay out my current state, I need to understand what the driver is, the strategy. Is it solely to drive costs out? That's certainly one approach. Is it to give us some kind of a competitive advantage and be disruptive in the marketplace? That's possible. It could be that we've just, because of over time, and we've added so many point solutions to various things, we've created this complexity that's very expensive. And so maybe it's like, you know what, we need to rationalize this, and we did not have so many different purchasing systems and so many different finance systems. We need to settle on one and figure out which one that is. Maybe we already have it and just buy more seats for it. Or maybe the ones we have are old and we need to look at what's the best option in the marketplace today. So get an idea of my future state based on what's driving that from a business standpoint. I have a point in the book. I talk about a thing called the SEAR imperative, S-E-A-R, and it's favorably influencing sales, expenses, assets, and risks. And so your IT strategy should address some part of those four things. Does it drive more sales? Does it help you cut expenses? Does it help you optimize your assets? I'm thinking particularly of working capital like accounts receivable and inventory. Does it help you mitigate risk in some way, like the cybersecurity issues? And so understanding what's driving my strategy helps me lay out where I'm headed. Now I'm going to put together what I think is the roadmap to get me there. I may need to have maybe a vendor give me some coaching on that, or maybe they use consultants to help them with that. One thing, though, I will jump in on and say is it looks to starting the strategy. And because I've done so many of these, I've seen this to be true. Too many strategies omit a section called assumptions and risks. And I think it's really important to list what the assumptions are, because if you don't list assumptions, then the readers will assume you are projecting, I can complete this project. Let's say your timeline is 3 years. I can complete this in 3 years with no interference. I assume nothing's going to interfere with me. And so, well, none of us would have predicted the coronavirus, right? And so if I didn't put some kind of thing in my plan that says I can hit these targets making these assumptions, that there'll be no disruption due to pandemics or no disruption due to social unrest, like through these demonstrations. Okay, well, if you didn't plan for that in your plan, people will think you're still going to hit your timelines, which probably will be disrupted. So assumptions are a key part of a strategic plan. So those four things: what's my current state? What do I look to my future state? What's my roadmap to get me here to there? And then what assumptions and risks are at play as I get from here to there?
Right. Okay, perfect.
I want to come back to one thing about the current state, because many times I'll hear executives tell me, listen, we don't want to mess with the current state. We know we have. Just lay out for us a good future state. Let's go there. Well, I understand that. But the reason that drawing up the current state is so vital is because once you lay this strategy out several steps down the road, you're going to put a price tag on that. How much new software or subscriptions am I going to need? Am I going to need any new infrastructure? Am I going to need consulting services to help me get to that future state? It's going to be a pretty big price tag. Somebody's going to ask, why is it so expensive to do this? Part of that answer is, well, because of the complexity we have today, we have to unpack that to get to our future state. And if I haven't done a good job of articulating my current state, then I'm going to have a hard time explaining what that complexity is to those outside the IT area.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, I just was thinking about this because even with progressive CIOs, I still hear and experience it in my own way, this disconnect between the CEO and the CIO sometimes. And it's for no other reason than the CEO views the IT shop as a black box. It quite frankly intimidates them. And so perhaps creating this current state vision helps defeat some of that misunderstanding of what it looks like. Is that right?
It does. It does. I don't mean to understate it, but a lot of the C-suite executives, except the CIO, their experience with IT is everything works because it's handed to them.
Right.
Their idea of uploading an app is going to the app store and getting something. It takes 45 seconds and now there's the new app. Why are you saying it takes 3 years? Right?
Right. Like the consumer experience.
Right. Yeah. And so I have to explain to them tactfully, and obviously not in a way that it is anyway condescending, but in a way that's tactful to say, here's where we are today. And whether it was smart or not so smart to get here, nevertheless, here's where we are. And so to get to any future state, we have to address the fact that we've got 6 different, let's say, core financial systems, because this division bought one and that division decided they wanted something different. And then we acquired this company and they use their own. And we've never actually taken the time to rationalize all that. And so we have today just this this mosaic, if you will, a patchwork of different systems doing fundamentally the same thing. So moving forward, you have to understand that it's not going to be just switch, you know, an old version to a new version. It could be switching complete vendors, and some of the vendors may no longer be in business. Do I have skills on staff to help me write the interfaces to get me from here to there? There's just a lot of considerations. And so understanding your current state really makes a big, I think it makes a very fundamental key to building on your IT strategy.
Right. And so let's say you take a good asset inventory of your current state, assumptions, risks, et cetera. You have a canvas full of words, perhaps a whiteboard. Where do you start? How do you make that decision?
What you're talking about there is prioritization. Michael Porter, who everybody views as like the great strategist from decades ago, was a former professor at Harvard Business School. One of the things Michael Porter said repeatedly was strategic planning is all about knowing what not to do. And so you'll have this big list on this whiteboard, as you said, and I'm not going to have the time or the money or the patience to do everything on that board in phase one. So I've got to prioritize what's the most important. And there's different ways to prioritize. I could say, well, do we have an urgent situation? Not too long ago, people had to pivot to do GDPR. If you wanted to do transactions in Europe, if you weren't already GDPR compliant, you had to change some of your systems to make sure that you were. That could be one thing. You could have a burning platform where your vendor has said, we're going to de-support this particular solution as of this date. And maybe you decide, well, I don't want to just stay on this unsupported. I've got to do something. And if I'm going to do something, I've been putting off doing this IT strategy. Maybe now's a good time to look at that. So that could be one of the ways you prioritize. You could do a business case and say, we've looked at our overall business and boy, the biggest value is for us to really optimize our procurement process. Because if we could do that, that's where we see the biggest financial benefit. Great. So maybe you prioritize based on that, or maybe it's kind of the flip side. Where's the quickest bang for the buck? Where's the quickest win I can get? And so maybe you prioritize that way. But where do I start? It's all going back to, I said at the beginning, I have to understand what drives my business. And if I understand that, increase sales, cut expenses, optimize assets, mitigate risk, what's driving my strategy, that'll help me prioritize that.
Right. We talk a lot on this show about the concept of business partnering. And because it's such a key element of having IT professionals be successful in their careers, because there's this lost in translation element that happens with all of us, right? Is either IT doesn't speak business or business doesn't speak IT, or IT, at which I talk to a lot of advisors through my daily talks and work, is long story short, IT thinks they know more about the business than the business does, right? As far as what they need, right?
Right.
So, and I don't mean any disrespect to all of our IT colleagues, but I think everybody's kept probably shaking their head saying, yeah, I remember a time like that, right? So I'm interested in your perspective on how developing a strategy, it could just be a micro strategy too for a specific business unit, right? We don't have to boil the ocean here for the company, but specifically how developing a strategy helps enable that business partnering at a very strategic level. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, sure. Now, in both my books, I spend at least one chapter trying to educate or putting forth some education for IT leaders on business acumen. How do you read a balance sheet? How do you read an income statement? How do I take my balance sheet and compare it to my next competitor in my industry to see how I'm performing? Because that's one way to look at it. I could look at the financial statements of my company and then look at the financial statements of another company that are public, and I can compare. Are our sales growing faster or slower than theirs? Are our costs growing faster or slower than theirs? Why is that? And just that simple analysis can make an IT leader sound very much like a business leader. And that can really help, I think, open the door for the IT leader to be invited in to the business discussions. Because too often, I think the IT team, the CIO on down, they'll get the business strategy after it's already baked from the business and then told to go execute it. How much better would it be if the IT leader were in the meetings when that strategy was being baked? So then they would know, hey, what you're suggesting here, either A, we're already doing, or B, that's going to really conflict with last year's strategy. So give us some guidance on what do you want us to do? Do you want us to stop that or tweak that? Or they might say, oh, if that's the case, then maybe we'll adjust our business strategy. If you're there helping them bake it, it's so much better.
Yeah.
I get a chance to speak rather frequently at industry conferences, and I tell CIOs, my view is that the CIO should report to the CEO. And if you don't, you should lobby either to report to him or her, or at least be in those meetings where strategy's discussed. Because it's not helpful if you're just getting the business strategy once it's fully baked handed to you. It's much better if you're there at the beginning.
Yeah, even more so in large enterprise type organizations, right, Jim? I mean, because you have these essentially scattered castles, especially if you have a decentralized organization.
Right.
Every individual business unit might want to have their own strategy, but it creates a bunch of point solutions and down the road, a bunch of technical debt versus even having the business people understand what an enterprise application strategy might look like. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Just awareness.
Yeah, just awareness.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say you've created your current state. You now have a list of wants, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You understand the business strategy. Take me to the next step. How does the business unit or the business person, stakeholder, how are they involved in the strategy creation process on the IT side, right? They might have invited their IT colleague over on the business side. How does the business person get involved in the IT side?
So the way I recommend it is, as part of the current state understanding, we conduct workshops. And I'll bring in the business area, maybe the managers and directors from that business area, and the IT folks that support that business area. And let's talk through the major processes. If you think through like purchasing, for example. So I've got requisition creation, I've got requisition approval, I've got PO creation, possibly PO approval, I've got issuing POs to vendors, I've got receiving goods, all these processes that are in that particular function of purchasing. And so I will walk through those. Let's talk through how effective is this today and what systems are in place to do this. You rarely hear that one system covers all of any business function. You'll hear, well, we use this piece for this part of purchase procurement. We use this piece for the next part of procurement. And then we punch out to Excel and do these four things. And then we upload the edited Excel file back in. And then over on this system, we do these four things. And so now you get a picture. And so now the business people can begin to see, yeah, you're right. This is pretty complicated. What I say in the book is I would encourage you then to do the IT people or the business folks to do a little bit of research. What you'll find is probably two or three vendors, software vendors, already do what you want to do pretty well. I don't know which ones they are, but you could probably narrow it down to two or three pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I would invite them in to give us a demonstration. Show us what's possible with your solution. Because in a larger enterprise, what you're running today is probably 5 to 10 years old. Yeah, it's been updated, but it's still not current technology. May not be mobile enabled. You may not be able to do blockchain with it or any kind of IoT stuff with it. And so bring the vendors in and say, show us what you can do. Now then, I could let my team go back and say, now that you've seen this, let's talk about what the future state looks like. So I can bring the business in to help us understand the current state, tease them up with what the future could look like from these vendors, and then go back and kind of recalibrate and say, now, what should we do going forward?
And how long do you recommend, as far as a time span looking forward, how far in advance do you recommend strategies are developed for? 1 year, 3 year, 5 year?
I typically see 3 to 5 year strategies, but what I recommend strongly is you put into your planning that periodically, at least once a year and possibly once a quarter, you at least do some reevaluation and potentially recalibrating.
Yeah.
Because things change, things are dynamic. And I just can't imagine a 3 year strategy that you launch today will go untouched for 36 months.
Yeah.
But I still have to have a place I'm aiming. Now then, if something comes up that interferes with my strategy, I either have to tweak a little bit or pivot a lot based on what's happening. I mean, this whole coronavirus thing has disrupted supply chains, the customer experience. Customers are now much more willing and open to do online than they were before, both industrial customers and consumers. And we're seeing that even CPG companies now, when they were previously not all that willing to sell their products to individual customers, they wanted the customers to buy from the big retailers so they could just do big truckloads of distribution. We're now seeing these CPG companies, you know, detergents and soaps and so forth, now being willing to sell from their website to ship me just a few items and not a truckload. And that's somewhat something of a pivot. They probably weren't planning to do that this quickly. But now this particular situation has caused them to have to recalibrate that. And so I would say, great, you recalibrated. So now, in essence, this is now the new starting point of the remaining 2 years of your strategy. And then you might look forward and say, well, if that's the case, 2 years out doesn't even align with this. We need to recalibrate completely. Great. I don't think strategy should be once set, then just, you know, methodically followed. You've got to allow for changes.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, obviously, but the thoughts are running through my mind. I still feel down deep, and talking to experts on a daily basis, CIOs on a daily basis, I still feel like strategies, once developed, everyone's excited about it for 3 months, then it's put on the shelf. And then people go into firefighting mode. How do you get companies out of that mentality? I know you just spoke about it a little bit, right? But it's not only just refreshing them every year, but how do you make it more of a working document?
I think that's a change management issue. And I talk about that somewhat in the book. There's three particular components to good change management. Communication is one, discipline is another, or resolve, if you want to call it that, and leadership. I have a section in the book called IT Governance. This is part of that. We need to stay the course to the degree it makes sense. And I need to have people kind of hold their feet to the fire, assuming the strategy still is sensible. And I need the people that either tire of this or something new has come up and we need to pivot. Well, once we pivot, let's pivot back if the strategy is still sensible. Yes, we've had a speed bump hit us, but did that mean we have to redo the whole strategy? Or does that mean, okay, let's catch our breath and go back to what we were working on that made sense when we launched it? So I think there's a change management component to keeping people on course. There's an IT governance component to keeping people on course. But you're right. I think disruptions like this coronavirus thing can cause people to pretty much toss their strategies out the window and say, how the heck with it. Let's just
Yeah, and that wasn't even the perspective of my comment. It was more business as usual. You're nailing it, though. It's this change management of making it something that is driving more awareness in the business of what this even is versus just the C-suite and the VPs putting together a nice PowerPoint, actually driving it down through the organization for awareness purposes, right? Because a lot of people want to know what this is all about. Like, what are the people in the high castle? What are they doing? Where are they trying to go, right? From a business perspective, if I'm a business person, right? I think sharing this with more of your business stakeholders on a regular basis as your North Star is what you're saying, right, Jim, versus just working on it once a year, maybe?
Right. I do think that. And kind of to pick up on a point you just mentioned, and the people downstream, the workers who want to know what's going on. One thing I've seen hold true is that while people may say they like change, nobody likes being told to change.
Right.
And that's what we're doing, right? We're saying we're going to now go this direction. And even though you used to use vendor A software, we're now going with vendor B because we've decided that's the choice for the future. And so all that you knew there, we're now going to retrain you, but we're going in this direction. And so communication, even over-communication, is vital because people need to understand why. I've got to overcome some people that are resistant, and I've got to coach them, help them march forward. Change management is a discipline unto itself. And how I get people to do that, not lose focus, not lose enthusiasm, that's a huge challenge, particularly for these multi-year projects.
Right. Let's talk a little bit, if you don't mind, let me shift gears quickly.
Sure.
One question that I ask every guest on this podcast is, if you were speaking to yourself 15 years ago, 20 years ago, right? Let's say at the beginning of your career, and you had to give yourself some advice that would have really helped you. What would that advice be, Jim?
People are the key to your success. Technology, while interesting and cool, we can make that work. And whether we're using old technology or on the cutting edge with new stuff, we can make that work. But people are the key. I've got to find people, work with people, get them to do things. We just talked about change management. Understanding that everybody on my team probably has different personalities. They come from different backgrounds. They're dealing with different things at home. And how I keep all of these moving parts moving in the same direction. Really, the people aspect is, the to me, the biggest key to success. And understanding that and being good at that really is the key to success.
Yeah. At all aspects of our life, too, right? Personal and professional. So, sometimes we have people in our lives we don't want in our lives, aka family, in-laws, you know?
Not much we can do about that, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I had to throw that in there. Personal experience lately.
You can pick your friends, but you can't pick your family, right?
That's right. That's right. Well, it's the primary reason why we talk about business partnering so much, which is really a professional term, you know, for what we're talking about here. Yeah. If you don't bring people along for the journey, what's the point, right? Nobody wants to read what they're supposed to do on a piece of paper versus having a understanding of the why, right?
And I think everybody wants to know how it affects them.
Yeah.
If we're going to go through this change initiative, how does it affect me? How's it going to affect my pay if it does? How's it going to affect how I'm evaluated for promotions? Get down kind of the nuts and bolts of it is all of us are working fundamentally for a paycheck. Now, we'd love to say that we don't, that we're working for the altruistic reasons. But at the end of the day, we've all got mortgages to pay. And we're all, it all comes down to that, I think. And so helping your folks understand why we're changing and how we're not leaving you behind. We're going to get you trained. We're going to work with you to make this work. At the same time, we think this is the right move for the company. So we need you to get engaged with us. We'll engage with you and we'll go forward. But yeah, I think people are the key.
Yeah. Now, what are the names of your two books, Jim? I want to make sure people know the names of the books so they can check them out on Amazon or wherever they purchase this material.
The newest book is IT Strategy. It was a number one bestseller last year. And the other book is Business Cases That Mean Business. And that book is written specifically for IT leaders to help them pitch their IT initiative proposals in business terms. Between the two books together, I think it builds a nice library for an IT leader who needs to develop a strategy and then also develop the business case to justify why I need to spend this money.
Right. If someone wanted to get a hold of you, Jim, where would they be able to do that? LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter? Where are you?
Yep, I'm on LinkedIn. My name, Jim Mahalik. They can find me there. Reach out to me that way. That'd be great.
That's great. Any final thoughts to share with our audience before we wrap it up for today?
I think this is a great time to be a CIO. There's just so much happening. There's so many dynamic aspects to the job now that maybe there weren't even just a few years ago. It's an exciting time, which is also a maddening time. So it's kind of, what's that book say? It's the best of times and the worst of times.
Yes.
I think it is kind of that. But I think it's an exciting time to be a CIO. And from where I sit, it's an exciting time to work with and coach CIOs.
Right. Well, this has been an absolutely wonderful conversation, Jim. Thank you much for the time today. If you found value in today's episode, please be sure to leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. And Jim, thank you again very much.
Dan, thank you so much. Great talking with you.
Have a good day.
You too.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. If you got value from today's conversation, please share this podcast with one person you think who would enjoy it. For show notes, episodes, and more, please visit thenegotiator.guru. Look forward to hearing from everyone soon. Thanks, and we'll talk to you soon.